There is a great temptation here to say, wait, what? Or even, huh. Instead, let me offer you this, and not for the first time either. Everybody step back and take a deep, deep breath. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is June the 24th, Friday, and what a day. Really good to have you along, as always, everybody. This whole Brexit thing, just to get it out there and to make sure there are no misunderstandings, is a big, big deal. And in the short term, not necessarily a good deal. But there are lots of layers to this thing, so we are going to do some special coverage today, take the whole program to unwrap them, starting where we always start on a Friday. Our weekly wrap, which today maybe we call our wrap of 8 amazing hours in the global economy last night. I don't know. Lynette Lopez and David Gura are today's lucky winners. She is at Business Insider. He's at Bloomberg. They are both in our studios in New York. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Can I exhale?
Yes, you can exhale now. Lynette, starting with a joke on a Friday. Nice. Lynette, we were talking before we went on the air. You all were out at a pub in Manhattan last night. You had a friend there with
all
a Bloomberg
of finance journalism.
It was amazing. I was watching it on Twitter.
My God.
What were you thinking?
Such nerds.
What were you thinking as this thing went down?
How could they?
Yeah.
How could they do this to us? We all knew what was going to happen to the global economy if they did. We knew weeks ago when there was even a suggestion of Brexit that the markets were going absolutely insane. The dollar was getting stronger. And that was roiling markets around the world and hurting commodities prices. And everybody was going nuts.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the second it looked like it was going to happen, the pound plummeted. Markets went crazy. Asia opened in the red. And the rest has been blood all day.
David, then, why did this catch us off guard if we knew what was going to happen?
Yeah, I was at the pub before Lynette was there, and things looked different by the time I left.
The time I left, it was ugly.
Well, we were tricked by the polls, which isn't the first time we have been, and the betting odds and all of that. But as Lynette said, I think that a lot of people knew that this was going to have some bad ramifications. You look at what happened today. I don't know what kind of trombones you've got queued up to play here.
I don't know either, man.
Numbers,
I'm not in charge. You know
about
that.
A 600-point drop. Yeah.
600.
That's crazy. Like, pull out the brass band. But, you know, I think that people didn't fully know what was going to happen here. I'm still processing what's happening. Policymakers are doing that. Of course, it seems like traders are still
figuring
that out as well.
Nobody really knows.
The phrase panic is being bandied about, Lynette, and I wonder if we should encourage people to step back for a minute from that, because while this is bad, it is not a panic.
I think the word panic is wrong to use. The word uncertainty, however, is correct to use. What we do know now is that the global markets are going to be crazy. If we expected Janet Yellen to raise rates maybe in September, May, and December, maybe we got to push that back to 2017. Maybe in a year. Who knows? But because we don't know what's going to happen to Europe, we don't know how this is all going to shake out with it could be an amicable divorce or it could be an ugly divorce between Great Britain. And maybe Scotland will want to leave the UK. We don't know. Maybe Spain is going to be like, well, this sucks. We're out too. We just don't know.
There are more referenda coming. I think you can bet on that. David, speaking of Fed chair people, Alan Greenspan was on CNBC this morning. He said, it looks worse now than it did on Black Monday in 1987 when the Dow was off 500 points, which was like 23% back then. He said this will have a corrosive effect. Discuss.
I'm not going to.
Go ahead.
With Mr. Greenspan. But no, I think, you know, it's going to have a corrosive effect. Again, I think it's going to take a long time to sort out here. I think Lynette's analogy to a divorce, was that your analogy or Kai's analogy?
It was mine. Anyway. I'm brilliant. I'm the brilliant one. I think what we really need to focus on here is that the global economy was already weak.
Right.
We were already struggling.
And Europe
And Europe is incredibly weak. Liquidity was already tight. Nobody has any cash. Nobody knows where growth is going to come from. And one of the things that was keeping Europe together was the fact that they all had to trade with each other. And if you think the squabbling is going to get any better, it's just going to get worse.
But so, David, this was the European community, right? The European Economic Community and then the European Union. It was an economic idea that has come to a political cropper here, right?
Absolutely. And we'll see what happens. I was talking to our former ambassador to NATO today, and he said this could be the end of the European experiment. And, you know, if the financial underpinnings start to fall apart here, what's left? We're seeing such cultural discomfort in the European Union right now when it comes to immigration, when it comes to national security. As you said, I think we will see more referenda down the line. We're going to see Scotland do it, I'm pretty sure. We're going to see an election this weekend in Spain in which this kind of populism is going to rear its head again. So, you know, these are uncertain times for the markets. They're uncertain times politically for the European Union as well.
Unless we not forget the Europeans love to fight each other.
That's a whole different political science class.
Sadly.
The idea, Lynette, that where we're going to go is the great unknown. How do we deal with that uncertainty that you brought up earlier? Or did we just kind of wing it and go, all right, let's see what happens?
Buy gold? I don't know. I mean, I tweeted last night, gold was surging. I was like, gold surging is generally a sign that human beings are doing something stupid. And yeah. I think that's where the market is heading. It's heading into, oh my gosh, how could we territory? And that's all. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you, Kai. I'm just going to sit here and watch.
We go out on a big sigh. Lynette Lopez from Business Insider, David Gura at Bloomberg. They were both in New York for us Friday afternoon. Y'all go back to the pub, would you?
Oh,
yeah, I'm going to cry into my martini.
There you go. Be good. Take it easy. A couple of days ago, the major indices were fat, dumb, and happy. Today, they are slightly less fat, maybe a bit smarter, way less happy. Clearly today, as Gura was saying, it's got to be the wah-wah trombones, but I'm not in charge.
I think today is going to be go down history as one of the worst mistakes the country's ever made.
Hopeful and excited.
Gutted. Absolutely gutted.
That is what you call Vox, by the way. Vox Populi. You'll be hearing it throughout the broadcast. People we went out to talk to and asked them what they thought about this whole thing. I had a chat with our man in London, Stephen Beard, yesterday, just as the polls closed. Suffice it to say, the way things turned out ran counter to the general tenor of our conversation. So we called him up again to get a sense of what things feel like the day after. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Kai.
First of all, were Brits as surprised as the rest of the planet about this?
They were stunned. I mean, there are many people here today who are in shock. Even some of those who voted for Brexit are in shock that it does indeed look as if after 40 years of EU membership, the UK is headed for the departure lounge.
A couple of things I want to break down with you. First of all, the demographics of this vote, the age split in who voted to leave and who voted to stay. Fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are lots of splits in this vote. And one of them, as you say, is generational. Mostly young people voted for Remain. Lots of divisions, though. Division in the government, which is the most dramatic. I mean, we had during the campaign fellow ministers tearing each other to pieces. Now we have the Prime Minister set to step down within 3 months and a leadership battle is looming between Remainers and Leavers in the ruling Conservative Party. So, you know, there's going to be another major split there.
I heard a phrase this morning in all of the coverage that I was listening to and watching that I hadn't heard before, the peasant's revolt, and how this is somewhat analogous?
Indeed. Certainly, there is another of these great splits, and it's between the people and the elites. This was such a slap in the face for the establishment. I mean, people voted for Brexit in spite of a lot of elites, business, academic, political, institutional, foreign leaders like President Obama, warning them not to vote for Brexit. And this does actually look like a kind of peasant's revolt, a mass protest from all those people who are on stagnating incomes, and this looks like a protest against some of the effects of globalization, like increased immigration, not a phenomenon confined to the UK, of course.
We are going to hear in about a minute or so from Scott Tong talking about the logistics of this thing, but it's worth a mention here that it's not like on Monday morning the UK disappears from the EU, right?
No, not at all. I mean, there will be emergency meetings over the weekend in Brussels. Next week, there will be more in Brussels and Strasbourg and Berlin. But this could be a very protracted process. A new British Prime Minister will take office by October. And then, only then, the long process of Britain withdrawing from the European Union will begin.
Stephen Beard in London. It's all Brexit all the time. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Kai.
As Stephen was saying, this whole thing is going to take a while, perhaps a long while. There's a ton of unknowns, but there is a roadmap, a process set in place for this kind of secession. But having a process doesn't mean it's not going to get ugly. Marketplace's Scott Tong has the Brexit nuts and bolts.
Imagine a couple announcing plans to divorce, but for now, nobody is moving anywhere. The British are in the EU until they negotiate their way out, says Derek Wyatt, retired law professor at Oxford.
There's no legal way for the UK to start stopping, for example, somebody from Poland who has just arrived today, and by the same token, British goods, British banking services are being marketed all over Europe today.
In the next few months, London plans to invoke Article 50. That's a clause in the EU Charter that starts the formal exit talks. And that starts a countdown. Within 2 years, they need a deal on the divorce terms. What happens to, say, the cross-border banks or shared fishing waters? Can Brits in continental Europe stay on? Can Poles or Italians in the UK? Here's law professor Gavin Barrett at University College in Dublin.
They have the right to be in each other's states by reason of the Treaty on the European Union, and yet that treaty now is being taken away. And with it, their right to be in each other's countries will go unless something is negotiated.
The EU and the UK could choose to keep a lot of the old links in place. They do have a long, entangling economic alliance, says Tim Oliver at the London School of Economics.
It's a bit like the Eagles Hotel California, that you can check out any time you like, but you can never really leave. But the EU is not something that you kind of just pick yourself up from and leave very quickly.
Now, if 2 years pass and there's no deal, the UK automatically gets booted from the EU club. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
I mean, I do want to retire in about 3 years, so I don't want my 401k to be affected.
I think that's not good. I don't know if it'll completely deteriorate the European Union, but it seems like it lessens its standing in the world or whatever.
Just to pick up on what Scott was saying there, and I can't say this often enough, it's going to take some time to see how Brexit turns out in actual practice. Right off the bat, though, it's worth looking at America's biggest banks. They've traditionally had big operations in London, where businesses involving the UK and the rest of Europe can most easily be done. Wall Street lobbied against the Leave side. They lobbied hard. But now that things have turned out the way they have, the banks are going to have to adapt. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has that.
Big American banks have around 40,000 employees in the UK. It has long been the natural location for U.S. banks to go global, says Peter Chase, senior fellow at the German Marshall Fund.
The reason London became a global financial center largely is because, one, it had a history of doing that. It was also, of course, an area where English was a common language.
London is Wall Street's gateway to countries that use the euro. If that situation changes, Frankfurt could be a logical choice for U.S. banks, but packing up and moving to Germany isn't a snap. For one, the city's tiny compared to London. It's smaller than Charlotte, North Carolina. Pete Kyle is a finance professor at University of Maryland's Business School.
You can't possibly imagine the whole American banking industry moving from New York to Charlotte any more than you could imagine the European banking industry moving from London to Frankfurt. It's just not a big enough city to absorb it.
Paris and Dublin are also vying for banking business. Moving staff will be a nightmare. KBW Research estimates that a quarter of American bank jobs in the UK could be affected. And for now, the banks have to keep things going in the shifting sands of London. Not easy, says Wharton finance professor Krista Schwartz.
It's likely that things will be more expensive for the banks and that there will be increased frictions in transacting with the European Union since they no longer will be part of it.
And we're just talking about operating headaches. The havoc Britain's exit is causing the global economy threatens the whole banking business. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Asian stocks had first dibs at reacting to the Brexit vote. Japan's Nikkei had its worst day in 5 years. Korea dropped. Hong Kong and Shanghai ditto. And that, as I said, was just stocks. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports now from Shanghai that there are more potential pitfalls ahead.
Asian countries have long depended on the European Union to buy their exports. The EU is an even bigger destination for goods from China than the United States is. That's why Arthur Kroeber, author of China's Economy, What Everyone Needs to Know, is worried about Brexit's impact on Asia's export-driven economies.
So if an impact of this is that we head into a sort of another growth slide in Europe, then that's bad for Asia, just in the very simple sense that it's another hit to their exports, which have already been, you know, pretty weak for the last few years.
On the other hand, says Kroeber, many smart economists believe that individually and collectively, the European economies would perform better if they were not part of the EU. Either way, China will be watching developments closely. The EU is China's largest trading partner, and as its economy enters into a slow growth period, selling products to Europeans couldn't be more important than it is now. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
I'm a little bit anxious because there's quite a lot of uncertainty of what's going to happen.
It will be very bad in a way, but eventually they will recover.
The only thing I fear is that it leads to many consequences over other countries which may have the same idea.
Coming up.
This is going to take a long time to play out.
That's what I've been saying. But first, let's do the numbers. All right, so take a deep breath, and yes, thank you for the wah-wahs. The Dow Industrials off 611 points today, 3.4%, 17,399. The NASDAQ down 202 points, 4.1%, finished at 4707. The S&P 500 down 76 points, 3.6%, ended things at 2037. But, and listen to this for the week, right, and put it in perspective. For the week, the Dow off just 1.5%, the NASDAQ down 1.9%, the S&P 500 off 1.6%. So, perspective. All right, in honor of the Brexit, let's do a little them and us today, shall we? Barclays down 17%, JP Morgan Chase down 7%, Sainsbury's down nearly 8% today, Walmart off 0.2%, Legal and General down 20%, MetLife down 10%. You see the pattern here, right? Them and us. National Grid up 0.5%. Duke Energy up nearly 0.5% today. Taylor Wimpey down 29%. KB Homes off 1.7% today. Royal Mail down 6%. FedEx down 4.5%. Bond prices fell as well. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.56%. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Scott Tong was telling us earlier there is a very long Brexit to-do list for UK officials. Figuring out how its conscious uncoupling from the EU is going to work. Right at the top of that list will be the UK's trading relationships, both with the countries it's leaving behind and with the rest of the world as well. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson is on that one.
Right now, EU countries are part of something called a single market. They've basically dropped their internal borders to allow free movement of goods, services, capital. They also negotiate trade deals as a bloc. Leaving the single market could make trade more expensive, more complex for the Brits. So the UK might try to model Norway, says Davina Gerard. She heads Akin Gump's European Competition and Regulatory Practice.
Norway takes advantage of the single market and can trade freely throughout Europe. However, Norway has no voice in Brussels.
And would the EU go for that? The UK will still be an important trading partner for the remaining EU countries. German automakers, for example, still want Brits to buy their cars. But the EU is also worried other countries might want to follow the UK's lead, says Miriam Sapiro. She's a former acting U.S. trade representative.
I think it's going to be very difficult for the EU to give the UK any special treatment or to negotiate a soft landing.
And Sapiro says these negotiations will take a while. That likely chills a pending transatlantic trade agreement between the U.S. and the EU, says Sebastian Mallaby. He's with the Council on Foreign Relations, and he spoke on a press call earlier today.
The U.S. might be politically open to including Britain, but how you do it is impossible to say when you don't even know what the trading relationship is between Britain and Europe.
In April, President Obama told Britons they'd go to the back of the queue for a solo trade deal with the U.S. But given the timeline, it'll be his successor who makes that call. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Yesterday, when the polls closed, one British pound sterling cost you $1.50, a buck and a half. As the vote started coming in, the pound dropped and then dropped some more, at one point off 10% all the way down to $1.32. That in a market where traders make and lose money on changes of fractions of pennies. The foreign exchange markets were humming all night. Ira Harris was in on the action. He's been a currency trader for 38 years.
I've traded through many systemic events. This one was most unusual. The markets were swinging on every reported voting station. So it was the ebb and flow which made the markets so volatile last night. it provided opportunities for profitability. I'm sitting in front of these whiteboards right now in which we outline certain scenarios. We had every reporting precinct or every reporting county, and so when the surprises were starting to come in, we were that much more prepared for it. This is a dynamic business, and if you get static in your thought, you will have a hard time, and I think that's what we saw some of this morning. But the market's waking up and figuring, well, this is going to take a long time to play out, and Britain is not going to disappear. They lived through the bombing of London. They lived through the nightmares of two world wars. They will adjust, and Europe will adjust to Britain.
Ira Harris there. He's a trader and an analyst with Vine Street Partners in Chicago.
What concerns me now is how Europe might view us.
I think we're better off on our own instead of taking orders from everybody else.
There is a context slice of the Brexit story that we need to get to before we go. The place that last night's vote has in the global economy and in history, really. Former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers wrote a quick post last night for The Washington Post. We got him on his cell phone this afternoon to talk about it. Mr. Secretary, it's good to talk to you again, sir.
Glad to be with you.
The markets, as we all know, will sort themselves out in the medium and long term. I want to get from you your perspective on what the events of last night mean for globalism in the long run. You, as you were writing this morning, do not seem optimistic.
No, I think this is probably the worst self-inflicted policy wound that a country has done since the Second World War. My hope is that this will be a wake-up call for elites everywhere on the need to develop a responsible nationalism. But the best way forward is not denial, is not railing against the folly of the electorate. It's seeking to design and approaches to economic policy that hear the anger that's being expressed in this vote.
Let me ask you about a different kind of policy, monetary policy. You write this morning, or you wrote late last night, I suppose, that the global economy today is brittle, your word, because of the low interest rate environment that we are in. What is to be done in the short term if the markets don't stabilize themselves?
Well, I think this is no time for austerity, and that policy is going to need to rely more on fiscal policy going forward than it has in recent years. That's going to have to be an issue for Britain. That's going to be an issue on the European continent. And I think potentially that's going to be an issue in the United States.
Well, let me ask you about that, because you used another word in this piece you wrote. You say you are alarmed that if the UK can vote for Brexit, perhaps the United States can vote for Donald Trump, and what that might mean for the economy. Discuss that a little bit.
Well, I think the same kind of sense that this couldn't possibly happen that surrounds the Trump candidacy also surrounded the Brexit referendum. And I think whatever damage Brexit may do to the global economy is small compared to the uncertainties that would be unleashed if Donald Trump became president of the United States. That's because the policies that Trump has advocated could hardly be better calculated to create uncertainty and economic instability.
Last one, sir, and then I'll let you go. I want you to answer with your gut instead of your brain. Is there any optimism at all, or are you just headed straight for the bunker on this one?
If there's optimism going forward in the world, one should have a very negative reaction to this event, but not a negative reaction to the American prospect or the human prospect.
Lawrence Summers, former Secretary of the Treasury. Mr. Secretary, thanks very much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
I just know that there was a vote taken this week, and that apparently they're leaving.
I saw it on the news this morning, and I'm glad when countries start giving up their sovereignty. You know, it's dangerous.
This final note on the way out today from the Marketplace desk of Laughing So You Don't Cry. In the hours after the Brexit vote was officially announced this morning, the top Google searches in the UK, and this is according to Google itself, by the way, the top searches were as follows. Number one, what does it mean to leave the EU? Think about that for a minute. Number two, what is the EU? Number three, yeah, no, I got nothing left. All right, on a Friday, and what a Friday it was, the Dow off 611 points, 3 4/10%, the NASDAQ down 202 points, 4 1/10%, the S&P 500 off 76 points, about 3.6%. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the vice president around here. I'm Kai Rizdahl. That is it for us today. More special coverage online, though, marketplace.org and on the air on Marketplace Weekend. Check it out. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Marketplace. You can get me at Kai Rizdahl. On Facebook as well, find my page. Some video stuff there. All kinds of good stuff. Check us out, marketplace.org. Have a good weekend, everybody. We will talk more on Monday. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.